Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. It is Monday. We take your questions. Thank you for those of you that supported us at charliekirk.com/support. We're going to be posting all sorts of episodes this week, podcasts, interviews, and speeches that I'm giving on the front lines. I hope you guys are going to really love it. It's made possible by those of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. I take your questions. Electoral College, why do we need it? And what is it? We go into the history of the Electoral College. Amy Coney Barrett, where do rights come from? And finally, 50 Cent, Chelsea Handler, and so much more. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and more. And HR manager salaries are never cheap. They're an average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business. And they help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month to month, there are no hidden fees. Cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time in HR compliance. Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/Kirk. Spell B-A-M to the B-E-E.com/Kirk. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this Ask Me Anything episode. It is Monday. In fact, it is the second to last Monday before this most important election of our lifetime. We are crisscrossing the country. I was just in Nashville, Tennessee. We were in Dallas. We were in Austin. We were in Sarasota. We were in Lubbock. We were in Phoenix. We were all over the place. If that is making your head spin, it should, because we have been crisscrossing the country fighting so hard to try to get this president reelected. We've been doing 3-4 events a day. We've been doing 2 podcasts a day. We have been doing 2 hours of radio a day, talking to everyone we possibly can, trying to persuade people to vote for this president. You know how big the stakes are for this election. You know that we might not get another chance at this, that if the opposition takes power, if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and most importantly, Kamala Harris becomes president of the United States, the country will be unrecognizable. I'm 27. I want a country that I can raise a family in, that I can prosper in, and that my values and my future will not be held by the ruling class. And so I want to thank all of you for helping make that happen at charliekirk.com/support. And it's Monday, so we are taking your questions. A great question right here is about the Electoral College. And it's a very good question. I've been getting a lot of these. It's from Hannah Delk. Congratulations, Hannah. You win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. And we are taking all your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And I also want to say we are going to be posting more episodes this week. We are going to be posting some of my speeches that I'm giving on the front lines. So some of you that say you wish you could see some of these speeches, you wish they were posted online, well, we are in the final push towards this election. So we are going to be posting more episodes this week, more content than ever. You'll get a kind of a little bit of window into some of the arguments we've been making on the front lines. And you guys make that possible when you support us. Okay, Hannah Delk. Hey, Charlie, I have a question about the Electoral College. Can you go over again why we have the Electoral College and why it works? Also, in the context of this election, with so many mail-in ballots and the likely delay of many votes being counted after the election, is it possible that a candidate could win the Electoral College on November 3rd, and then when more votes are counted later, the Electoral College win be reversed days or weeks after the election? Thanks so much for all you do, Hannah Delk. Well, first of all, the Electoral College is a stroke of brilliance. Remember, the states created the federal government. The federal government did not create the states. State sovereignty is fundamental to the U.S. system. And this is something that a lot of countries in Europe do not understand, and they don't have it in their system. In France and Germany or Spain, it is a centralized system. It is not a federalized system. It is not that there are states that have the true power and the federal government is created through a coalition of those states. That's not how it works. understand, remember, the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution says that all rights that are not articulated in the Bill of Rights are left to the states and to the people. The people created the states created the federal government. So because of that, the founding fathers went through a variety of different ideas of how do we elect a leader? How is it that we actually bring someone to be president of the United States? So a simple answer is let's just have a popular vote. But the founders were very careful not to do that system. They, of course, entertained it in Federalist number 68 in the Federalist Papers. And this was a huge debate that many of the founding fathers had. In fact, it was James Madison in Federalist 51 that talked about there could be a potential tyranny of the majority. He also talked about this in Federalist number 10. James Madison, of course, was the chief architect around many of the viewpoints of the U.S. Constitution, and he was, of course, the fourth president of the United States. He was a philosopher, one of my favorite U.S. presidents, so incredibly brilliant and ahead of his time. And so James Madison correctly identified some of the problems that would be in the system if we just had a straight up or down vote. He was worried that there would be a disenfranchisement of the working people. He was worried about the hyper-urbanization that would come to America that he was seeing in London with the Industrial Revolution looming, with technology expanding. He was worried that very angry masses could end up destroying the voice and the vote of those people that might live in a more agrarian lifestyle or a more agrarian background. And so the founders got together and they tried all sorts of different ideas. And at first, it wasn't perfect. In fact, at first, whoever got the second most votes in the Electoral College ended up becoming vice president. That was kind of a silly idea. You have someone running against each other and you make them form a government. Now, understand how elections work in the United Kingdom or most of Europe is that almost all the power is through the legislative branch. And so, for example, in the United Kingdom, it's mostly through the House of Commons. And so by getting to elect a prime minister, you have to then give a certain party power. Rarely does that party ever get to have a majority support. In the United Kingdom, for example, the Conservative Party, which at times is not very conservative, will get 38 to 40% of the vote only through specific hyper-local elections. They don't actually vote for a quote-unquote prime minister in the United Kingdom. Then the party will caucus, they will pass a couple procedural votes, and eventually then they'll bring it to the entire House of Commons, who will then elect a prime minister. That prime minister is solely held accountable by the House of Commons. That prime minister does not have any direct connection to the people except through the House of Commons. If the House of Commons gets upset, they'll pass a no-confidence vote, and they will remove the prime minister. So the prime minister is nothing more than an extension of the legislative branch in the United Kingdom. This is very similar to how Nancy Pelosi operates in our country. She's nothing more than an extension of the legislative branch. The executive within the U.S. Constitution is uniquely American. There's a couple countries that have tried it, but I think the American system has really struck it perfectly. The executive does have some absolute powers. For example, there is no check or balance against pardoning or commuting sentences. There's very little check or balance against a president being able to temporarily deploy U.S. forces in times of crisis or war. Now, eventually, all wars and bills of war and all acts of wars should originate from Congress. However, we've expanded that in the executive over the last couple decades, I think in some ways negatively. That has given a lot of power to the executive branch to be able to, let's say, engage in misadventures abroad and overseas. So the founding fathers debated all of this, and the tyranny of the majority was essentially saying that there would be an inherent weakness to majority rule, that angry mobs and people that would get around demagoguing politicians, they shouldn't be given all the power. They should still respect the voice of the people, but how do we actually represent this coalition of states so as to not disenfranchise some of the lesser populated states? And so I completely agree with this. I do not think that New York, San Francisco, LA, and Boston should be able to run up the score and destroy North and South Dakota. Now, this is not a view a lot of people on the left have. A lot of people on the left frequently will tweet out or post on social media, it bothers me that the population of Manhattan is the combined population of North Dakota and South Dakota. Now, on the surface, that sounds like it's a perfectly respectable argument. However, if North and South Dakota, if we actually respect their sovereignty and their co-equal voice in the United States Senate, which is a coalition of states, and that every state will bring something to the table to allow the other state the capacity and freedom to exist in this country, then it does not matter the density of your population. It doesn't. Instead, you must take a much broader picture. For example, New York City, they're very reliant on a lot of things that South and North Dakota bring to the table. oil, food, all sorts of different supply chains are made possible thanks to North and South Dakota. And if New York has such a problem with North or South Dakota and they don't want them to be in the coalition of states, well, then use your power to try to say we're going to kick the Dakotas out of the United States of America. But understanding this coalition of states gives voice to states that otherwise would not have any sort of voice in a representative government. And it's actually worked pretty well. It has made U.S. presidents actually care about issues surrounding farming, around land ownership, around rural America. Otherwise, that would be forgotten flyover America that would have their values and their ideas and their teeth metaphorically kicked in with great regularity. And so the Electoral College works still on population. It doesn't say that population has no bearing whatsoever. It just puts a cap on how much your population can influence the rest of the country. So for example, New York and California, it doesn't matter if Joe Biden wins by 30 points. They still will get a pre-prescribed amount of electoral votes to New York or California. Same goes for Texas. Same goes for Florida. And so in order to win the United States presidency, you might get 55 electoral votes from California or 29 from New York or 29 from Florida or 38 from Texas, but you need a coalition of states. You are not able to run up the score in certain urban areas where everyone basically agrees on the same sort of ideas. This is where the idea of the suburban swing voter came from, where you might be able to win a lot of the urban vote, but are you going to actually be able to win some of the swing voters in the middle? That is the serious and most important question. And so as we kind of see the landscape today, the question is, has the Electoral College been outdated? And the answer is absolutely no. It requires a president to win one of the most diverse states in the country, Florida, Texas, or Arizona, or maybe Nevada. It also requires to win a couple Midwest states, Iowa, Ohio, North Carolina, and Georgia. Just the pure majority from New York or California, is that actually representative of the entire country? It's not. The country must have a diverse set of opinions and viewpoints. And this has worked really well. And for people that want to abolish the Electoral College, their solution is actually not that simple. Some of them say, well, we just have to go to a popular vote. Will it be who wins a majority of votes or who wins a plurality of votes? For example, Bill Clinton, in his two attempts to win the United States presidency, won the popular vote, but never won a majority. He won a plurality. For example, in 1992, he won 43% of the vote. George W. Bush won 37.4% of the vote, and Ross Perot won 18.9% of the vote. Because of the two-party system we have, which does allow big coalitions of differing ideas to have a bigger voice than not, we don't have these splinter parties. We don't have a pro-life party. We don't have a pro-choice party. We don't have a pro-gun party. They are forced to work in bigger coalitions. Therefore, these ideas are actually given more protection. These ideas are actually given a bigger platform than they otherwise would have been given if it was not for the Electoral College system. So in order for the president to win, he has to win a massively diverse array of states. It's very hard for the president to win without Arizona. It's very hard for the president to win without Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Ohio, Iowa, and then maybe also tagging on to that Pennsylvania. And if he's able to do that and tag on to Pennsylvania, he will have won some of the most racially, linguistically, culturally, and demographically diverse states in the entire country. And this is a very important point because it forces candidates to travel to parts of the country that they otherwise would not have cared about. It forces candidates to actually go to states like Iowa. And that's another important point that we should mention about the Electoral College, is that not every state counts their electoral votes the same. The way the system was originally designed to work by the Founding Fathers was to count each congressional seat as its own vote in the Electoral College. Now, we haven't completely deviated away from that. In order to tabulate the representation of what each state gets in the Electoral College, they are able to tabulate how many congressmen they have, plus how many senators they have, and that's how many electoral votes they have. The Electoral College then needs to be certified by the Electoral College, then the Electoral College votes, then the president gets selected as president of the United States. However, if you look at Maine and Nebraska, they are the only two states that do this. They separate their electoral votes based on congressional district. So in Nebraska, they have five total electoral votes in the state of Nebraska, but three of those votes are actually divided based on congressional district. Nebraska Congressional District 1, 2, and 3. Maine does the exact same thing. Maine has Congressional District 1 and 2, and the entire state, you get two electoral votes if you win the state. Last time, President Donald Trump one congressional district, two in Maine, getting one electoral vote in Maine. In fact, President Donald Trump visited Bangor, Maine on Sunday to try to win the second congressional seat. Lumberjacks, lobstermen, fishermen, people that love the hard, muscular style work, they love Donald Trump. And so Maine, that is thought of as a very liberal state traditionally, actually gave one electoral vote to President Trump in 2016. Barack Obama in 2008 actually won one electoral vote in Nebraska back in 2008. He lost that against Mitt Romney in 2012. And so the electoral system proves that anyone can become president. Someone with big Democrat ambitions, such as President Barack Obama, and also or someone with more broad conservative ambitions, like President Trump did in 2016. The Electoral College forces politicians to get local. I do not think it would be healthy for our country for a politician to parachute into New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, San Francisco, L.A., Seattle, and Portland, and just try to win the big population centers in our country. That will not be representative of a country that is actually much more diverse, that is reliant on a variety of different issues. Here's a good question for you. Do you care that America is energy independent? It is one of the most incredible accomplishments that President Donald Trump has achieved in the last 4 years. It's absolutely incredible. The fact that we are exporting oil is something that we should be so proud of, and something that many politicians in both political parties have been talking about for decades, that we will one day not be reliant on the Middle East for oil, that we will not be reliant on Russia, that we will be not reliant on Iran for oil. It's an amazing thing. How did we get to be energy independent? Well, it's because politicians, specifically President Trump, actually gave a voice to states that were into fracking. Remember this moment in the debate when Joe Biden said he would phase out oil and gas, and President Donald Trump said, ooh, that's a big revelation. Play tape.
Would he close down the oil industry?
It's false.
Would you close down the oil industry?
By the way, I would transition from the oil industry, yes.
Oh, that's a big statement.
It is a big statement.
That's a big
statement. Because I would stop.
Why would you do that?
Because the oil industry pollutes significantly.
I see.
Here's the deal. But
that's a big statement.
Well, if you let me finish the statement, because it has to be replaced by renewable energy over time. And I'd stop giving to the oil industry. I'd stop giving them federal subsidies. He won't give federal subsidies to solar and wind.
Yeah.
Why are we giving it to oil industry?
We actually do give it to solar and wind.
We
and
have
that's
one
maybe
final
the biggest
question.
Statement in terms of business. That's the biggest statement.
Okay.
Because basically what he's saying
question,
is he is
Mr.
going
President?
To destroy the oil industry. Okay. Will you remember that, Texas? Will you remember that, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma?
Vice President Biden, let me give you...
Why was this such a big deal? You see, if this was just a popular vote, no one would care about Joe Biden's stance on fracking. He would say, screw fracking. I don't like fracking. Fracking is terrible. But fracking is good for the country. And fracking is only given a voice because of the Electoral College system. Fracking is only given a voice because President Trump and Joe Biden have to win very specific parts of very specific states to win the presidency, like Pennsylvania, like Texas, and Southeast Ohio, and West Virginia. That's where fracking is most prevalent. You see, if we did not have an electoral college system, their voice would be minimized. And with it, America would not be energy independent. The ruling class in New York and Boston, and the angry, chattering class in California would say, we don't like fracking, and they'd impose their will on the rest of the country. You ever hear the president say, I love our farmers, we've given all this money to farmers? Why do you think the president does that? Well, of course, because he's trying to communicate to rural voters in Iowa, in Ohio, in Texas. You heard the president say that he's a pro-life president. Why is that? Well, it's because being pro-life is very popular in the key battleground states. You see, when you go state by state and you start to realize that the president and Joe Biden have to align their values to mainstream middle-class values, it starts to make sense the utility of the Electoral College, that the Electoral College is not just a good idea to put up on a whiteboard. It's actually made America more prosperous. It's actually made America energy independent. Otherwise, presidents would never, ever care about what they did to rural Pennsylvania where most of our energy comes from, or farms where most of our food comes from. Instead, it would be the Californication of America. The most radical billionaire interests paired with activists that care most about racially divisive issues, partnering together to try and disenfranchise working people. And so the Electoral College was a stroke of brilliance. It's one of the only reasons why we are still free in our country. If it wasn't for the Electoral College, President Donald Trump would not stand a chance. If it wasn't for the Electoral College, I don't know if we'd ever see another Republican president again. The Electoral College is designed for a coalition of states because the states form this government. The federal government did not create the states. And if you actually look in the last 50 years, most times the Electoral College winner correlates with a popular vote winner. But when it doesn't, there was a reason for it. For example, George W. Bush in 2000 or President Donald Trump in 2016. It's because certain candidates did not win the states that people thought they would win. For example, Al Gore did not win his home state of Tennessee. If Tennessee didn't want Al Gore to be president, then why should America want Al Gore to be president when he served in that state of Tennessee? Or Hillary Clinton not winning Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, or Pennsylvania? When someone loses the popular vote but wins the electoral vote, there's usually a reason for that. It's because other parts of the country rejected a highly coastal agenda. As James Madison said, be aware of the tyranny of the majority. It is something that we must watch out for, that the rights of people in a republic must be respected. And by the way, the tyranny of the majority results in the oppression of minority groups, comparable to a tyrant or a despot. And John Stuart Mill argued this in his 1859 On Liberty. If you guys don't know who John Stuart Mill is, I highly encourage you guys to check out John Stuart Mill and Jeremy Bentham, who, of course, were proponents of utilitarianism. I don't agree with all of it. I think it's incredibly interesting to study the thinkers that helped build Western civilization. And John Stuart Mill, by the way, was one of the early adopters to call for the women's right to vote, women's suffrage, in 1832. John Stuart Mill, very interesting. And of course, John Stuart Mill, writing on liberty, really addressed the natural limits of power that can be legitimately exercised by society over the individual. John Stuart Mill is a huge fan, and would be still a fan today, of the Electoral College. What creates the most checks and balances against angry and loud demagogues like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to get to power? John Stuart Mill, of course, also argued that discourse was a necessary condition for social progress. We've talked about this a lot before on the Charlie Kirk Show, that Aristotle, of course, the last of the Greek classics, when Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. Aristotle, of course, who studied under Plato for about 20 years. Aristotle argued that we were the speaking beings. There's only two ways to govern people. You can do it by force, or you can do it by speaking, talking, and persuasion. If you do not have the capacity to speak, which many Democrats on the left want to get rid of the First Amendment because of the tyranny of the majority, then you will destroy the capacity for us to govern ourselves. This is something that is fundamental to being an American. States' rights, local governance, stop looking to the federal government. Look at the differences of reaction from the Chinese coronavirus. Look how Kristi Noem handled the virus versus J.B. Pritzker. Look how Ron DeSantis handled the Chinese coronavirus versus Gavin Newsom. Bars, restaurants, businesses are open in Florida. So are churches. Bars, restaurants, and churches are mostly closed in California. Ron DeSantis has more old people in his state per capita than California. Yet Ron DeSantis has not had to raise taxes. They have a 0% income tax rate. California has the highest taxes in the country. That is what good governance versus bad governance looks like. However, the issue with the tyranny of the majority would be you would have the despot that would rule everything. The beauty about a state-formed government is you can travel, you can move, you can leave and still be under the federalized system that was created. So the Electoral College is as old as America. It has worked for a reason. Not to give away the keys to the kingdom for someone promising everyone free stuff and misrepresenting issues in California and New York, but instead speaking clearly to the states that are the backbone of the country while also forming a coalition of states that are incredibly diverse, like Florida and Texas, like Nevada, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico. Those states get more focus, more attention than they otherwise would have, thanks to the Electoral College that has kept our country from the hands of tyrants since our inception. And I pray we'll keep it that way. You guys have heard me talking about Good Ranchers before. They're unbelievable. They're the best. You guys want to get meat in a box from all across this beautiful country, it's goodranchers.com. They bring 100% American-born, raised and harvested meat to families across America. This vision was instilled into them from their grandparents that owned community grocery stores and believed in trust, charity, and family values. Goodranchers.com partners directly with only American ranches from across the United States to bring the highest quality meat right to your door. Goodranchers.com. Goodranchers.com gets 100% American-raised beef right to your door, beef the way it used to be. Get America's best grass-fed beef delivered straight to your door. Don't forget, shipping is always free and the taste is always delicious. Don't waste your money on cheap cuts or overseas beef buying from other guys. Get the best American beef cuts your family deserves with Good Ranchers. Buy today at goodranchers.com, promo code Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, goodranchers.com, promo code Charlie. Next question from Kristen Keller. Hi, Charlie. If the Democrat senators weren't going to vote, how were they allowed to grill Amy Coney Barrett? They asked her if they ever traded sex for money or favors. The least they could ever do was vote. I agree. I don't understand why they were even made to vote that day. Are they right in needing a quorum or Republican Senate majority be enough to get her through? Kristen Keller, congratulations. You win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. You emailed us freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. So, Kristen, it's very important to first and foremost recognize the Democrats did not put up their best effort against this. The Democrats' current playbook is to passively ignore the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation, which as this episode drops on this day, Amy Coney Barrett will probably become the 9th justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. Instead, Democrats are going to take power and pack the court. Now, that's if they take power. If Democrats take power, they're going to do everything they can to pack the court. I actually don't think they have the power to pack the court. I don't. I do not think they'll get the votes. I don't think they'll get the victories. I don't think they will get the consequential turnout that they need to flip the Senate blue. I don't. I do not think that they will be able to turn the United States Senate. And if they do, it'll be on such narrow margins that I don't think the at-risk senators will then go along with the radical idea of trying to pack the court. Hasn't it been amazing to see how many churches have been silent on the confirmation fight of Amy Coney Barrett? Amy Coney Barrett may overturn the illegal and unconstitutional and immoral ruling of Roe versus Wade. And yet so many churches across the country, using moral pietism, have remained completely and totally silent as we are now on the verge of overturning Roe versus Wade. Many of those churches were in the streets marching for BLM Incorporated, critical race theory, and falsely saying that America was a systemically racist country. It's been very telling to me how churches have been quick to pander to the Marxist BLM Incorporated, but very slow and reluctant to say any good word about Amy Coney Barrett. That should give you a very disturbing window into where the American church is right now. But to finish the question, Amy Coney Barrett is a symbol of why Trump won and why Trump needs to win again. Do you want the radical Democrats packing your court? Do you want revisionist judges and activist judges? We've gone through the different types of judges before. Activist judge, strict constructionist judge, and textualist judge. Amy Coney Barrett is a textualist. She believes in the spirit and the words as it was written. It is not a judge's role to try to say, well, I wish the law said this. It's not a judge's role to try to read into what they wish a law said. It's not a judge's role to try and infer. Instead, it's a judge's role to be a judge. And so this is one of the most incredible victories for President Trump, one of the most consequential points of achievement for the conservative movement, where Judge Antonin Scalia even said himself back in 2011 when he was asked by Peter Robinson from the Hoover Institution, so are you optimistic about the future of the court? And he said, that's an unfair question. It's hard to be optimistic after this last session where he dissented in all six cases. We went from a circumstance where the court was in radical left hands to now being in constitutional hands, thanks to President Trump. And if you're out there and you don't like Trump's tone, or your friends don't like Trump's tone, send them this podcast and just have them listen carefully to the significance of having constitutional judges. If you want to effectuate change, go through the legislative branch. If you want to make America in your image, then go pass a series of laws. Don't use the third branch of government, Article 3, to try and read into laws where things are not said and they do not exist, to try to give you more power and try to confirm your own agenda. The left would get angry if we did that, rightfully so, in the courts. And we should get outraged when people use their power, like Sotomayor and Kagan, to try and mysteriously and baselessly say that there's a right to abortion in the United States Constitution. No, there is not. Nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it say there is a right to terminate an unborn child. Abortion is not mentioned in the U.S. Constitution. It's not. And when Roe versus Wade was decided, it improperly and illegally overturned state restrictions on abortion. And so the Democrats that were demagoguing against Amy Coney Barrett, they never intended to vote against her. And your question is well taken. They never should have been allowed to ask questions if they weren't going to vote against her. But as you're probably listening to this episode, on the day you're listening to it, Amy Coney Barrett will likely be confirmed as an Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court. And now our next task is making sure that they don't add another 8, another 10, another 15 justices of the U.S. Supreme Court to pack the courts because they're angry that they lost. And that is the current trajectory of the Democrat Party. They can't win under the current rules, so get rid of the Electoral College. They can't win under the current rules, so mail every single person a ballot, 80 million ballots going in every single direction. They can't win under the current rules, so expand the U.S. Supreme Court. They can't win under the current rules, so legalize another 20 million illegals in our country. The rules are there for a reason. As Justice Antonin Scalia said, fall in love with the gridlock. Fall in love with the difficulty. It's better that no law is passed than a bad law is passed. Let me say that again. It is better that no law is passed than a bad law is passed, because at least you'll still have your freedom and liberty. This is one of the biggest lies of the U.S. Congress. They keep on saying it. Well, we have to always do something. No, you don't. It's better you do nothing than you do something bad. It's better you didn't touch health care than pass Obamacare that destroyed health care in our country. And now we are living under a health care crisis in our country made possible thanks to Obamacare and the quote-unquote Affordable Care Act. The rules are there to not allow you to make America in an image that doesn't recognize first principles, that doesn't recognize natural rights, that does not recognize that rights are given to us by God, not by government. That's why these rules were laid out. That's why we have an electoral college, as we just went through. That's why we have 9 justices. Now, 9 justices is not in the U.S. Constitution. We've tried different numbers throughout our history, but 9 has been the precedent, and it's worked really well. And when the Warren Court and the Burger Court started to pass far left-wing decisions, including nationalizing abortion, Republicans were not calling for adding seats to the U.S. Supreme Court when Reagan was president, because we always played by those rules. And the Democrats know they cannot win under the current parameters and the current rules in front of them. Instead, they are going to try and win by changing the playbook that we live under. The rules are there to keep men free or women free. Remember, the law are the wise restraints that keep men free. If you live within a framework, you're less likely to have government abuse your natural given rights. The Democrats want to abolish that framework. They have a problem that framework even exists in the first place. They have great concern that there is even any limit at all on what certain despots and tyrants cannot do. And that's what the U.S. Constitution really is. It is rules for the road for tyrants. The U.S. Constitution comes from the presupposition that you are given these rights naturally. It's not a king that gave you these rights. That blood has no bearing whatsoever, meaning that you don't get a title of nobility in America. All people are created equal in the image of God. Article 1, Section 9 of the U.S. Constitution. And because of this, people that want power more than they want people to be free are upset with that system. So they do everything they can to try to delegitimize that system. They know they cannot win or operate under the current American framework. So what do? They launch the 1619 Project to try and convince you and your children that the system was actually flawed from the beginning, rooted in slavery. That's a lie. So what do? They launch Howard Zinn's History of the United States. They debase and delegitimize the basis point that we're all operating from, when in reality, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Federalist Papers, they've done a pretty incredible job of protecting liberty and freedom over these last couple centuries. And now all of a sudden, this coming generation that is being propelled and being supported by far too many people that are adults think they have all the answers. Human beings are awfully predictable creatures. We, in the state of nature, are awful to each other. But we have certain freedoms. We have the freedom to be good or bad. You must teach goodness. Since people are inclined to be bad, you need restraints. You need civil government. You need police. You need to be able to adjudicate differences. That's why we have a Department of Justice. And you need to be able to protect whatever sovereign nation that you create. Every civilization has had to ask these questions. And most civilizations answers them incorrectly. Most countries answer the question of how do we govern ourselves by making the strongest, most persuasive demagogue that is able to command a military force to be put in power. Our system works differently. Who can persuade the people? That's how you get to power. And Amy Coney Barrett believes that. It is one of the landmark accomplishments of the constitutional conservative movement, and I'm so proud to have played a small part. And as you see Amy Coney Barrett pass that Senate hurdle and be confirmed, smile to yourself and then say, that's thanks to President Trump. And then do something to give President Trump 4 more years. There's always a rise in break-ins during the holidays. It's why Simply Safe Home Security is having a huge holiday sale. 30% off any Simply Safe system and a free security camera. Recently, U.S. News & World Report called it, quote, the best home security system of 2020. Whether you're traveling or staying put for the holidays, it's 30% off plus free security camera, the deal before it ends. High-quality equipment, there's criminals on the loose. What are you doing? It's great camera footage. You guys gotta get SimplySafe.com. Get 30% off at simplysafe.com/Charlie, simplysafe.com/Charlie. That's simplysafe.com/Charlie. Protect yourself, protect your family, protect your loved ones from all the criminals and the vigilantes out there. simplysafe.com/Charlie. Last question here. Sorry, the first two, a little bit longer-winded response. Very important questions, though, about Amy Coney Barrett and the Electoral College. Hey, Charlie, what do you think about Chelsea Handler's comments regarding 50 Cent? Thanks so much. Love the show. Carla from Montana. Congratulations, Carla from Montana. You are a winner of the MAGA Doctrine. So let's play tape of exactly what Chelsea Handler said. Play tape.
So he doesn't want to pay 62% of taxes because he doesn't want to go from being 50 Cent to 20 Cent. And I had to remind him that he was a black person so he can't vote for Donald Trump, and that he shouldn't be influencing an entire swath of people who may listen to him because he's worried about his own personal pocketbook. So I haven't heard back from him yet, but I...
Now, this is after 50 Cent, who, those of you that don't know who he is a very famous rapper. And traditionally, of course, he's supposed to be a Democrat because he's a black Hollywood celebrity. He saw Biden's tax plan and came out and fully endorsed Donald Trump. Now, his endorsement was a little bit sloppy. He said, I don't care if Donald Trump hates black people. I'm for Trump, Trump 2020. And 50 Cent has come under massive ridicule, as you just heard, from white liberals like Chelsea Handler. Chelsea Handler is a nasty woman. There is no other way to put it. Chelsea Handler is not a decent person. To say that about black people is so unbelievably despicable. And this is typical of the white liberal ruling class. Here's what Candace Owens, the great Candace Owens, had to say. Chelsea Handler, another racist white woman telling a black man, 50 Cent, what he is and is not allowed to do in 2020 America. Wake up, black America. Hashtag Blexit. Democrats have always felt like they've had control over black people. The KKK was founded around this idea. The Democrat Party has always cared about people's skin color. They've cared about people's skin color in the 1860s, and they care about people's skin color today. Republicans passed the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. Republicans have always been on the right side of racial issues. Democrats have always been on the bad side of racial issues. Despite that, because of demagogues and misrepresentative media, black people vote overwhelmingly Democrat. In fact, I think that's actually going to change, though. We are seeing massive movement for President Trump. New poll, Trump's black voter approval nearly doubles in just 3 days. A new survey found that President Donald Trump's approval among likely black voters skyrocketed between Monday and Friday of this week. The results of Rasmussen Report's daily presidential approval tracking poll found that President Trump's approval among likely black voters went from 25% on Monday to 46% on Friday. This is incredible. And the president's overall approval rating was 51% on Friday. The president's doing a phenomenal job for our country. And it is time that we start to do something about that and we get our friends to the polls. But the fact that President Donald Trump is getting that kind of support from the black community is incredible. It is a game changer, everybody. President Donald Trump getting that kind of response and that kind of support from black Americans just goes to show how fickle the Democrat monopoly is over black voters. And then you see people like Chelsea Handler say, well, I have to remind a black person that he's black. The left does not believe someone is black if they're not a Democrat. Play tape of Joe Biden saying just that.
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
Joe Biden believes this. That wasn't a mix-up. He just regretted saying it. I just wish that President Trump would have said that in front of the entire country. Hey, Joe, do you think that 50 Cent is black? Joe, you said that people that don't vote for you are not black. Why do you believe that? And that is exactly the view that white liberal Democrats have over black people. Any black person that is voting for a Democrat is getting suckered by them. They do not care about you. They don't want you to have school choice. They want to addict you to government programs. They want to keep your streets dangerous. Republicans want to double the police force. Republicans don't want to focus on skin color. Republicans want to expand educational choice and opportunity. We want to expand employment options and opportunities. President Trump has had opportunity zones, criminal justice reform. It's Republicans that have done the most for the black community, while it is Democrats that have kept black people endlessly poor in the inner cities of our country. And so what do I make of this? Chelsea Handler being a typical white liberal trying to bully a black person. And after it seems that it worked. 50 Cent then kind of retreated and he said, F Trump. He says he never liked Trump at all. And effectively all the backlash that he's been receiving has got to him. It's too bad. And I'm not going to go after 50 Cent. I'm sure he's going through a lot and he got into something he didn't even realize. But now he's being bullied around by the modern day plantation owners like Chelsea Handler. Chelsea Handler says she'll pay 50 cents taxes if he drops Trump support. I don't know if you can afford that because I think 50 Cent is probably paying tens of millions of dollars in taxes. And 50 Cent says, yeah, I don't want to be 20 cent. 62% taxes is a very, very bad idea. Yeah, that's exactly right. And this is just a growing theme when black Republicans start to come out and they say, I'm going to support President Trump. Look how they treat Kanye West, Brandon Tatum, Candace Owens, Terrence Williams, Rob Smith. But the list is growing more and more. Larry Elder. They're not going to be able to say that against black people much longer. The more that they try to attack, demagogue, and demonize black Americans, the more they are going to put themselves in a very compromising position where they look like the white ruling class liberal plantation owners while black Americans are just trying to get ahead. So my opinion of this is that this is nothing new. This is precisely and exactly the contempt that Hollywood has for any black person that dares think differently. And I hope that more black Americans make their voice heard to support President Trump. It very well might get him four more years. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. And thank you for those of you that get involved with Turning Point USA, tpusa.com, tpusa.com. And finally, today, go vote. Just vote early, vote securely, and get 10 people. Take out a piece of paper and list 10 names that you are going to bring to the polls. We are going to be posting more episodes this week than we ever have, so you guys can see the speeches we've been given across the country, because we want to raise the intensity, increase the energy that you bring friends to the polls, that we are going to send a message on November 3rd, unlike anything the radical ruling class has ever heard before in our country. It's time we take our country back from the people that have been censoring us, lying about us, shutting us down, stripping us off social media. I'm Chris Cross in the country. It's time to fight back. God bless you guys. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.